So in Joshua 1, what's kind of the big takeaway from Joshua 1? Might be a couple of them.
Be strong and courageous.
Yeah. God tells Joshua, you be strong and courageous. In fact, the people, the men of Reuben, Gad, and half-tribe of Manasseh, tell Joshua also, be strong and courageous. Maybe another big takeaway is that Joshua is like the new Moses. Now, Moses died, buried by God there at Mount Horeb. They're in the valley, people don't have another leader, so Joshua's going to have to step up and start serving. Then in chapter 2, you got the two spies who go into, name of the city?
Jericho.
And they meet a lady named?
Rahab.
Okay, and so Rahab, she protects them. She also wants salvation, God to save her. And so they promise to protect her and her family, provided that they stay in the house where this scarlet cord is hanging from her window. Remember, we mentioned that that's kind of like a new Passover, right? There's like the scarlet on the door, scarlet on the window, and everyone who's in the house will be saved. There's a passing over her house. So she's like a new Exodus, not from Egypt this time, but from Jericho, from the Canaanites and their idolatry. Then we come to chapter 3. So chapter 3, 4, and 5 is what's on the docket for today. We're not going to do a whole lot of reading, but chapter 3, to begin with, look at verses 1 through 6. Then Joshua rose early in the morning, and they set out from Shittim, and they came to the Jordan, he and all the people of Israel, and lodged there before they passed. At the end of 3 days, the officers went through the camp and commanded the people, as soon as you see the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord your God being carried by the Levitical priests, then you shall set out from your place and follow it. Yet there shall be a distance between you and it, about 2,000 cubits in length. Do not come near it, nor that you may know the way you shall go, for you have not passed this way before. Then Joshua said to the people, consecrate yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do wonders among you. And Joshua said to the priests, take up the Ark of the Covenant and pass on before the people. So they took up the Ark of the Covenant and went before the people. The Lord said to Joshua, today I'll begin to exalt you in the sight of all Israel, that they may know that as I was with Moses, so I will be with you. And again, Joshua is sort of posited as a new Moses. So they're getting ready to cross the Jordan River. This is a time of the flooding. So the Jordan is quite, what's the word, inundated? That's too much.
Overflowing?
It's overflowing. The water's high. Yeah, let's just make it simple. Yeah, the water is high. Justin, come up. Think of the fancy word. And so this is, I don't know, this is intimidating, getting ready to cross the Jordan River. And if you are the Canaanites and there's an army over there, what might you be thinking?
They can't get across.
All right, there's a big army over there, but we're safe, at least for now. Okay, well, God's going to do something with that. So Joshua is going to be made like Moses in a very particular way. So what I've asked in question one, if you have the questions, if not, I'll try to get you those by email or something. But Joshua 3 is going to describe how God leads the people into the promised land. How does he do it? Almost, yeah. So how do you lead to the Red Sea? The wind blew all night and crossed through on dry land and then shuts it back, destroys the enemy in the process, right? In fact, the song that we sang, We Are Bound for Canaan's Land, just before us, Jordan rolls, right? But the verse before that talked about the Red Sea. So here's a generation. They were kids when they crossed through the Red Sea. And here they are, and there's this kind of new Red Sea. Smaller body of water, but still, it's like, hey, we're the new generation coming in. It happened before, we can do it again. But what else? There's a little bit of a difference here. What else happens? Amos?
They place memorial stones.
Okay, so there's some memorial stones that are going to be set up. What else? Okay. What's with the Ark of the Covenant? What is the Ark?
Leading them. It's God's throne.
Okay, so you're making some conclusions. So this is the Lord leading them. The Ark of the Covenant represents God's kind of like traveling litter, his throne. And so it says again and again when they're building the Ark of the Covenant that this is the Lord is enthroned above the cherubim. There's the mercy seat. And the Ark of the Covenant typically goes where? they're traveling around, it goes before them. Wow, it's been a long time since we looked at this. It's in the most holy place, which is in the center of the whole tabernacle compound, which is in the center of the whole camp. So if you go back and you look in Leviticus and Numbers, God wanted to dwell in the midst of his people. And so the Ark of the Covenant represents where he dwells. It's not an idol. It's sort of like if you were to go into the temple and expect to see some giant statue of some great god or goddess, and there's nothing there. Just a chair, but you know someone's sitting there. Right? And so if someone's sitting there and it's deity, we're not even going to look at the invisible person. We're just going to put a veil over it so nobody can see it, because if you see the invisible person, you die. And that's kind of what's happening with the tabernacle, is God's dwelling there in the midst of his people. And so when they would set out, remember, what was it that led the people?
The cloud.
Yeah, the pillar of cloud by day, pillar of fire by night. And you can track that back to Genesis 15 with the pot and the torch and things. So you've got the pillar of cloud, pillar of fire. And whenever it would set off, the people would go, okay, time to break camp. And they'd start to break everything down from the tabernacle. And what they would do is they take the veil, which separates the most holy place from the holy place. They take the veil and walk it forward and lay it over the Ark of the Covenant. And then it gets wrapped up. And then it's going to lead the way. Now, in this occasion, it's going to lead the way, not just as they wander in the wilderness, but it's going to lead the way into the promised land. What's the problem with this?
You can't come in within 2,000 feet.
Okay, so God gives some instruction about the distance they're to have. What's the problem with that?
It seems a little unwise to let your leader go all alone with all its guards, basically unable to do anything except lift their leader up.
I know how we're going to take the land. Let's carry a big box made of gold. Okay, and we're going to go march off about a half mile away from the rest of our army. That sounds like a great plan, but that's what they do. Now, Amos kind of mentioned it. What this is really about is the Lord is leading the people. He wants to take the charge. And so this is about the Lord commanding his people, leading the way. They don't know the way that they should go, and so they're going to follow the Lord into the land. All right? As they come to the water, what happens?
It heaps up on one side and the rest of it trickles away.
What do you mean heaps up on one side? Somebody else give me a little, help me visualize this. You see it parting? Now with rivers, it's a little different with seas, right?
It said it like backed up all the way to a certain point up river, right?
Yeah, it piles up toward Adam, or what was the other place here? Did I write it? Say it one more time.
Zarethan.
Yeah, Zarethan. Thank you. Yes. And so it backs up. And this is about 10 miles north. And so they're down in the valley. And, you know, with a sea, and the water's going to be right there. But with a river, you know, it's going. So, well, that's going to, I don't know what that sound's supposed to mean, but you know, that water just keeps going, and so this water is just kind of like piling and piling and piling and piling. And I don't know how you visualize this, but I kind of picture like it just kind of, it's still flowing down, but it's like it's met an invisible barrier, and it's starting to make this big bubble of water. I don't know how you visualize that, but it's just piling up, and they're going to have to cross over. So as soon as the priests step down into the water, that water stops, goes down, and then you've got dry land, and the people can march on through. So if you're in Jericho, you could see all this, and you're thinking, they're never getting in here. And all of a sudden, whoop, and now we've got a problem. All right? Anything else that you want to point out through chapter 3?
No. It did stand out to me the fact that the priests had to actually dip their toe, like the water did not part, and then they walked. Like, they had to walk as if the water had already piled up.
Right. Yeah.
For the water to stop.
If you've seen Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade, this is going to be a spoiler if you haven't. But there's that moment where he's like, okay, I'm going to step out, and then he steps, and then it's there. Well, it's there. But with this, they actually step into the water, and they have to, like, get their ankles wet, like, okay, what's supposed to happen here? And then the water stops. So growing up, I kind of pictured like they stepped down and the water disappeared. They said, that's not what happens. Their ankles get wet. God shows up as they demonstrate their faith. What else do you notice in chapter 3? Rebecca? Yes. We're not told in chapter 3 why those men are pulled aside yet, but it does say here, what's the verse? Is it verse 12? Thank you. Yeah, take 12 men from the tribes of Israel, from each tribe a man. So chapter 3, verse 12, and then we'll see later in chapter 4 what's happening. But pull these men aside. Why? Okay, well, we'll see. Now, there's one other point I think is worth noting here. Look at the ways that God is described in this chapter. How is he described? Look at verse 10 specifically. He's the living God. You shall know the living God is among you. And then verses 11 through 13, twice he's called the Lord of all the earth. And there the Lord is lowercase, meaning he's the master of all the earth. Now, this is a generation that they might, hopefully they would remember the Red Sea, the 10 plagues. What's God demonstrating in the 10 plagues?
His power and how he's greater than Pharaoh.
And not just greater than Pharaoh, but greater than all the gods of Egypt. I mean, you turned the Nile River to blood. You just stepped on their pantheon of gods. So God is greater than the gods of Egypt. He's not just the God of Israel. He's the God of Israel in the wilderness. He's about to be God of Israel in the land of Canaan. He's the Lord, Master, Ruler of all the earth. So he's not a local deity. He is demonstrating his power wherever he is to control the forces of nature. Pretty impressive. Elijah?
Isn't it kind of almost trash talking the other guys to call him the living God versus what?
Yeah, no, that's an excellent point. Yeah, the living God versus these gods that aren't. Right, no, yeah, that's right. Okay, other thoughts through chapter 3?
It's interesting how it doesn't name the 12 men who God assigns.
I hadn't thought about that. That is interesting. A lot of times with when you're building something, whether it's a memorial or even down at certain libraries, you know, they'll have like the wall of patrons, people who have donated money, and it's kind of like memorializing their good deeds. These guys, what are they doing? Picking up rocks. But it's the Lord who's going to need to be remembered here. Okay, chapter 4. When they get through the river, these 12 men, what's their job?
Pick up stones.
Pick up rocks. Now, there's a little bit of a question in my mind in chapter 4, verse 9. Chapter 4, verse 9, at least in the ESV, in most translations, says, Joshua set up 12 stones where? Where's he set?
It's in the middle.
In the middle of the Jordan.
King James says in the midst of Jordan.
Yeah, so in the midst of the Jordan. So
it implies middle, but I mean.
Yeah, midst, middle. Yeah, that's the same thing. Just English. It's a weird thing. Okay, so you've got these stones. And so where are the stones going to be set up?
Which stones?
It sounds like there are two groups of stones.
So I think there are two ways of looking at this, and I'm not sure. I lean one direction. It may be that there are going to be 12 stones here and 12 stones here. 12 stones like on the dry ground, right, in the land of Canaan they got from the riverbed. And then 12 stones that they actually stack up in the river itself. So there may be two stacks of stones. I tend to think, though, that this is really, and the Young Living translation does a really good job with this verse, where it just says, they got the stones from the midst of the Jordan and then set them up on the dry ground. I think that's probably what's happening, is there's one stack of stones. I'm not sure. Either way you take it, the 12 stones, if you got them from the riverbed, I mean, when would you have opportunity to do that?
Only while it's dry.
Only while it's dry. And so this is memorializing an event that the people crossed over, and it was miraculous. God provided this way through. So I'm not sure if it's two stacks of stones, or if it's one stack of stones. I'm not sure. Any thoughts on that?
Which one stack of stones where do you think it would be? In the river or on the ground?
I think on the dry land. I think the idea is they got the stones from the middle of the river and stacked them up. I think it's a tricky translation question. All right? Now, they're going to stack up these stones. How would you work that? If you're an Israelite, this is kind of question 2A. If you're an Israelite, and these stones are there to help memorialize what God had done in leading the people over, dads, moms, how are you going to work that?
God led us through the Jordan like he led us through the Red Sea, and we conquered Canaan.
Okay. So you're going to tell the story really simply and move on. Right?
It's another opportunity to follow what Moses instructed. You know, as you're walking maybe to the marketplace or something, and you see this memorial, start sharing the story about how God not only delivered us out of Egypt, but into Canaan.
Okay. I want you to imagine how you would tell your kids. Let's say you're traveling along, and if you're like me, you know, when you're on a road trip, the point is to get there. Some people take road trips, and they want to stop off, and, oh, there's a scenic outlook. Let's stop and pull over, and like, a gas station, let's go in. Can we get some treats? Get to the bathroom, get in the car. While you're in the bathroom, I'm taking the dogs, and gassing up the car, and we switch out, and 5 minute stop, we're gone. Yes, okay? I don't want to take the scenic route. Let's go, 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 go. And so let's imagine here I am, a Hebrew father, and I've got my wagon load of goods, and we're going, and we're going to be making a sale here in town, and we pass by, and we sit down and take a break, maybe the donkey threw a shoe, or we're getting lunch or something, and then one of my kids says, Dad, what's that big stack of rocks over there? That's kind of interesting looking. Those are big rocks. Oh, yeah, that's, you know, that was, hand me the nail in the pack of, you know, the sack of nails and the hammer, going to fix her. So years ago, Joshua, he led us through, and we stacked up those rocks, okay? All right, go ahead and spread out the lunch, and you just keep going. Did I do what I was supposed to do? I told him what the rocks were about, right?
Maybe you should tell how God led them through with the Ark of the Covenant.
Isn't this a moment to slow down and really like demonstrate the impact of what that stack of rocks is? And a lot of times, we just kind of rush through spiritual opportunities like that, don't we? At least I do. And one of the kids asks a question, hey, Dad, what's such and such? And I go, oh, well, let me give you the factual answer and then move back on to whatever it was that I'm doing or thinking. Because it's important. I did the thing. I was the good spiritual leader dad in that moment. And then I move right on with what I'm supposed to be doing. Instead of saying, oh, here's an opportunity, and let's camp out on this idea for a while, and really help you to appreciate, memorialize what this is all about. Lynn?
I'm just thinking at the end of chapter 4, there's a beautiful progression of what they're supposed to be doing, where yes, they are relating simply the story of passing through the Jordan, but then there's the connection of going back in history and connecting that to what had happened with the Red Sea, and then there's the other progression of, but what does that tell us about who God is? Like, there's this whole connection that you're supposed to be making, not just physically this is what happens.
Right. Let me give you all the historical details, and then, all right, I did my job. But what about the application of that, the conclusion of that? What does that change about my relationship with this God of history? The things that he accomplished then and what that means for you today? So that all the peoples of the earth may know that the hand of the Lord is mighty, that you may fear the Lord your God forever. I want you to look over at the book of Judges. Book of Judges, chapter 2. This is another generation. Chapter 2, verse 11. And the people of Israel did what was evil in the sight of the Lord and served the Baals. And they abandoned the Lord, the God of their fathers, who had brought them out of the land of Egypt. Why did they abandon the Lord, the God who brought them out of the land of Egypt? They forgot. they didn't know him. My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Could that generation have done something about it? I think these memorials are really, really important. Elijah?
They let him do what they needed him to. They let him help them against the nations. Okay, thanks, God. You helped us take out these nations. Now we're more powerful than them. See ya.
They got what they wanted out of the relationship, right? And then they failed to consider the most valuable thing that God offered wasn't the land, it was himself. So, I don't know. Imagine being a Hebrew mom or dad, and you get this stack of rocks out here. I don't know. Like, could you schedule a camping trip? And we're going to go, and we're going to camp out by Gilgal. And, you know, every few years we're going to cross the Jordan together. Like, we're going to swim the Jordan or ford the Jordan. We're going to at least camp out here. And we're going to retell the stories. And we're going to sing the songs. And we're going to set up our own memorials. God has helped me this far. And we're going to pray together. We're going to dedicate ourselves together to God. Think about, I don't know, modern application of this. What can you think about how we can do this today? Whether you're mom or dad or not, even just for your own personal life, like, what do I do in making sure that I remember what the Lord has done for me? What do you think? Justin?
Fellowship and spending time with your family and passing the wisdom from the past and God's word.
Yeah. Making sure that I have a relationship with my family. So that then me telling them about what God has done is a natural part of that process, right? Having God in my conversations with my family all the time, it's got to be a natural thing. All right? David?
Prayer.
Okay. In what way?
I think it's prayer that is reflective of God's mercy. It's important to understand that you don't have to have the blessings that you have, and it's certainly not something that we deserve, but it's something that God gives through his abundant mercy.
When Lindsay and I were engaged, she bought me a prayer journal. And I'd never really done anything like that before, and I thought, okay. And it took me years to fill up because I was bad about writing down my prayers. And you don't write down every prayer, obviously, but you write down significant thoughts and you record conversations with God. And sometimes I would write down scriptures I was reading in connection with those prayers. But I remember years ago going back through some of those and looking back, and there were some specific things I had prayed about that God did years later answer. And so what that's become is a memorial. It was just me and God, but I can look back on that now and say, God showed up. And here I am, and I can tell you about it. And if you want to ask specifically what that was, just ask me later. But there are several instances where I can look back and say, God answered that. Set up memorials in your life. Now, there are some memorials that God has set up for his people today. The one that obviously comes to mind is the Lord's Supper. And what do you do about that when your kids say, oh, I want some bread. You know, can I have some juice? No, that's not for you. Maybe that's an opportunity to say, all right, so this is what this is about. Is it okay to talk during the Lord's Supper? I mean, obviously I'm not part of the conversation. But like, to whisper to your child, to have this conversation, explain, well, this is what this is about. And let me tell you about Jesus. And we just listen to this. But they'll hear it from you in a way that they won't hear it from other people. What else? PJ?
I think worship, like, you know, after work, coming home, even though you're tired, maybe pushing back your dinner a little later.
So having like a regular habit, a tradition almost, of worship there.
Singing and praying.
Maybe your work day's not gone so well. Didn't have a great day at work, I'm tired, I'm exhausted, I'm frustrated. But right now is my time to remember how good the Lord has been to me. And I'm going to set up that memorial. That's good. That's good. Amos?
Reading scripture, maybe writing some down, remembering what God has done for people.
Those are good spiritual practices, and we can make habits out of those that help us remember. Lynn?
I'm trying to figure out how specifically out of Egypt, God had to take us through the Red Sea and the Jordan, and we didn't own this land, and we didn't have what it took. Like, God had to do all of these things, and we have to be willing to walk through the ugly paths to be able to display the power of God. And so I'm just thinking about for us today as Christians, like, God has brought all of us out of bondage. He has chosen us to be his people. When we choose to be his people, are we willing to talk about it in that sense, or are we too ashamed or embarrassed, or like, I don't want to talk about that, I don't want to bring that up, that's painful to relive? Well, if God has saved us, then what an opportunity to bring glory to him.
I think that takes some real discernment sometimes, because you need to remember the audience, who it is I'm talking with. I'm reminded of Ezekiel 16, based on what you're saying. Several times in Ezekiel, God says, "You shall know that I am the Lord." And then here he says in Ezekiel 16, at the very end, he says, "You shall know that I am the Lord, that you may remember and be confounded and never open your mouth again because of your shame, when I atone for you all that you have done, declares the Lord." They had a real problem with pride. And so God said, "You will know who I am when you remember your sin. And in remembering your sin, you'll be so glad for my mercy." And we do God a disservice sometimes when we talk in generalities. You know, God saved me. From what, exactly? What's that pile of stones there? That's a good point. Alex?
And having these discussions can help us think about it for ourselves more, and maybe come to a better understanding about it, or realize that maybe we don't know as much as we should.
Sure. Yeah. Just consider. Consider some kind of habit, memorial. God instituted these for a reason. Now, the obvious go-to is the Lord's Supper. Okay? Don't take that for granted. Every week, there's a memorial that we observe. We pass by a pile of rocks. Don't let it be just passing by a pile of rocks. Let it have its impact. Let that story change you. But then consider other ways that you can memorialize what God has done. Right? Lee, you had a hand, and then I'll need to move on.
I agree. Incredibly important. But read Judges 2:10. We must give this to our children.
Yes.
The whole generation grew up. They did not only not know God, they didn't know what God had done for their parents.
Right.
I'm stunned by this when I read it.
Yes. Yes. All right, question number 3. We get to Joshua 5. There are several things that they do when they cross over. So they set up this memorial, the waters rush back. If you look at chapter 5, verse 1, as soon as all the kings of the Amorites who were beyond the Jordan to the west, all the kings of the Canaanites who were by the sea, heard the Lord had dried up the waters of the Jordan for the people of Israel until they had crossed over, their hearts melted, and there was no longer any spirit in them because of the people of Israel. I mean, go figure, right? Like, I would be crawling out of my skin. Get me out of here. Somebody else be king. I'm gone. Now, pay attention to that phrasing, though. Their hearts melted. Okay? Watch that, because there's going to be a shift in the book of Joshua about that phrasing. Now, in chapter 5, verses 2 through 12, there's some other things that they do when they cross over the Jordan. What are some of the things that happen? At least 3 things. Okay, the men are going to be circumcised. Another wonderful strategy coming in to enemy territory. Let's take all the men of fighting age and incapacitate them for about a week. That's great. What's happening here? Why do we need to circumcise this generation anyway?
It's a sign of showing that you trust God.
It was a command of the Lord, and it was about their covenant with God. So God had said, do this. But we're doing it to the adult men. When were they supposed to do it?
8 days old.
We got a bunch of 8-day-old warrior men out here? No. They hadn't done it. They'd been out in the wilderness, and that generation that had died, that had been unfaithful to the Lord, they had not circumcised the next generation, which tells you something about their understanding and their appreciation and their trust in the covenant God had made with them. They hadn't even circumcised their kids. So, they circumcise these men. And what's this going to take? We're going to do this in enemy territory. What does it take?
Faith.
It takes faith. Because I can't protect you, family. You know, I'm going to be out of commission for a few days. The Lord's going to protect them. Okay, so circumcision. 2 other things. What else happens?
They take the Passover lamb.
They take the Passover for the first time in enemy territory, in the promised land. Okay? So they remember that God has led them out, but not just that he's led them out, but now he's leading them in. So this new nation is built on the past. Their identity is in their salvation. And that salvation changes them going forward. God didn't save you just to save you in the past. He saved you for the fight that is ahead. Right? And then the third thing, Amos?
Well, specifically it says that they had no manna with that meal because they had that in the wilderness, but now they could enjoy the fruits of the land.
The manna stops falling. You go out on a Sunday morning, you've had, you know, the weekends, it doesn't fall on Saturday, right? And you go out on Sunday and you're expecting manna. Check your sundial. It's a little late today. No manna. You go home about lunchtime, I guess it's just not going to be any manna today. What does that do for you? Did God forget you? You just, you know, forgot to turn on the manna machine? What happened?
There's a tree over there with fruit on it.
Go take it. Go take it. There's the legend of Cortez when he comes across the Atlantic with his men. He burns the ships. Why does he do that?
No plan motivation.
There is no plan B. There's nothing like motivation. No, there's no plan. This is it. You do or die. So we're going into the land, and we're going to conquer. We're going to take, because there's no going back. It's not like, you know, there's some leftover manna that mom left in the refrigerator back in the wilderness. Like, there's no. You take the land. And so this is about God fulfilling his promise. Lynn?
It's also a reminder of what the actual promise was. Like, the manna was not the promise. Him feeding them through the wilderness and keeping their clothes from wearing out, that was not the promise.
It was a provision for a time to get them to where they needed to be. Right? Okay, so we've got circumcision, Passover, and the manna. Those are kind of the three things that happen as they cross the Jordan River. Something else I missed? I see the look on my mom's face. I know what this is.
Just at the very end of the chapter.
Go ahead.
Well,
sit on that. Okay. Bigger part. I mean, tell my mom to sit on it. But other thoughts through just when they cross over the Jordan River. Okay. Alex, did you have a hint? Oh, Amos? Yes, Amos.
I was going to say what...
Yeah, don't go there yet. Anything else? Elijah.
With the circumcision, he talks about how he rolls away their approach
Excellent.
To Egypt.
Good.
Is that kind of the idea? They really are God's people now. They're crossing into this land with other Gentiles, kind of solidifying the idea that they are God's. I don't know.
Yes, so the word Gilgal means rolling. Right, so this is Gilgal. By the way, pay attention to geographical locations when they're repeated. Put it this way. Let me answer your question. So the rolling away the reproach of Egypt. Remember that generation? They had kind of given up on the covenant, so they did not circumcise their children, and that's part of this reproach. Is this is my covenant people? They're going to keep my covenant. Even Moses kind of got there, right? Where Moses did not circumcise his son as he was supposed to, and Zipporah does it for him, right? So, same idea. Now, Gilgal, do you have certain scents that are nostalgic to you? Yeah. Like certain songs that come on the radio and you go, oh, I remember that girl I used to date, or, ugh, I remember that girl I used to date. You know, like, there's certain things that just, like, they put you back. The Bible does that a lot of times, either with phrases or with geographical locations. And God is kind of nostalgic sometimes about geographical locations. Gilgal is going to show up again and again and again. It shows up later with Saul in 1 Samuel 15 when he disobeys the Lord. And so imagine Saul, he's disobeyed the Lord, and there's that pile of rocks. Think about it. So God gets nostalgic about some of these things, and later he's going to say in Hosea 9, it was at Gilgal that I began to hate them. Why? Because they're trampling on his song. Okay? They're stomping all on his song. All right? Alex?
Just recently I was reading about some of the rules that take place around the Passover and what you needed to do, and there also is a lot of rest involved there. After the Passover,
good.
And they have like a whole week where they're not supposed to be working on things.
I just which is probably even more unnerving. So you got this army on your doorstep, right? And they're just chilling for a week, right? So it's like, what are they going to do? So yes, yeah. But they're having to trust God. Yeah. All right, this last bit here in Joshua 5, verses 13 through 15. When Joshua was by Jericho, he lifted up his eyes and looked. And behold, a man was standing before him with his drawn sword in his hand. And Joshua went to him and said to him, "Are you for us or for our adversaries?" And he said, "No, but I am the commander of the army of the Lord. Now I have come." And Joshua fell on his face to the earth and worshipped and said to him, "What does my Lord say to his servant?" And the commander of the Lord's army said to Joshua, "Take off your sandals from your feet, for the place where you are standing is holy." And Joshua did so. What in the world is going on here? This is really fun, really interesting. Let me preface this, though. And yeah, Lee knows where I'm going with this. Let me preface this. A lot of times you're reading scripture and you go, "Ooh, wait, I see a connection." Be really careful, though. We don't want to make assumptions. So there are some things where we can say, "I think this is," but we've got to be careful that we don't draw conclusions where the Bible hasn't told us to draw conclusions. This text does not say who this person is, but it also gives some pretty big, significant clues about who this person is. So here's Joshua, and he steps out, and I don't want to read too much of the text, but I'm imagining Joshua. He's got this whole army with him, all these people, and they've recovered from the circumcision, and the manna has ceased, and they're eating from the fruit of the land, they've taken the Passover, and now it's time to get to business. And there is Jericho. It is a walled city. These walls are like 30 feet thick at the bottom. How are you taking this thing? And you know that the Lord's going to give you victory. You have every confidence in the world that this city is yours for the taking, but this is your first battle in enemy territory. And you're just kind of studying the scene, and then you look over here, and there's this man standing with his sword drawn. And your first question is, "I don't recognize this guy, so who is he? Is he for us or for our enemies?" And you ask him, and he says, "No." I'm sorry, that was an either-or question. Us... enemies, no. What does he mean?
He's the commander of the Lord's army.
Well, that's what he's going to state, but Winston, you want to expound?
Yeah, I love this passage. Probably my favorite in Joshua, because I think it's so applicable for us today. What I wonder that this army commander is saying is that he's with the Lord first. If the Israelites are with the Lord, they can be on the same side.
Yeah.
But if they're not with the Lord, then they're going to be on a different side. And I think it's so applicable to us. We get so caught up in different movements or ideologies or strategies. Like, am I for Black Lives Matters or All Lives Matters? Neither. I'm for the Lord. Am I for Republican or Democrat? Either. Neither. I'm for the Lord. When people line up with what God's Word says, yeah, I'm with them. But when they don't, I'm not. And we need to have that allegiance first and foremost, because we can get swept away with all these emotional movements, but we have to make sure that we're tied to God first.
But these are the Lord's people, Winston.
Look at their history.
Think of Israel's track history here. Has it been really good to say, "I'm on the side of the Lord's people"? Well, if they're the Lord's people, yes. But what about just on the side of Israel?
Circumcised the people, and they were...
They hadn't even acknowledged the covenant, right? The circumcision. So, wow. Or what about when everybody wants to stone Moses and go back to Egypt? The real question is, are you for the Lord or not? The legend is that there are reporters asking Abraham Lincoln, do you think the Lord is with you, you know, back during the Civil War? And he says, "No, but I do hope we're with the Lord." That's the question. Am I fighting on the Lord's side? It's not, is he going to show up? Is he going to stand behind me? Is he going to help me in my life's battles? The question is, are you fighting the battles he wants you to fight? Because if you're not, you better quit that. Find a different battle. So this man shows up with his sword drawn and says, "I'm the commander of the Lord's army." You just got outranked, Joshua. Amos?
Usually we would think of ourselves as good guys, and then there's the villains, the bad guys, but God made all of them and talks about in Ezekiel, I believe, how God is with Babylon as well.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. There are times when God lines up with the enemy against his own people because his own people have deserted his way. That's a good point. Okay. So this command of the Lord's army, and how does Joshua respond? Yeah, he falls on his feet, or on his face. He's worshiping. The ESV doesn't say that he worships him. It says he's worshiping. I think it's fair to say he's worshiping this commander. But the commander also says to do what?
Take your shoes from your foot, so this guy... This God, in my mind, from what I read, is God. Numerous times we see in the Bible, we say, get up, I'm not God, don't worship me.
That's right. Whenever, yeah, when John bows down to worship the angel, Revelation, don't do it. Cornelius bows down to worship Peter, don't do it. And so here we've got Joshua bowing down to the commander of the Lord's army. Even if it's an angelic being, this seems odd, doesn't it? Where was the other occasion where someone was told to take their shoes off?
Moses,
the burning bush. Now, at this point, you think, well, that was God in the burning bush, wasn't it? Well, it was, but it was also someone else. Who else was there at the burning bush? The angel of the Lord. So you got the commander of the Lord's army, you have the angel of the Lord. Who is speaking to Moses out of the burning bush? The Lord. So what you have here is an interesting opportunity to look into the unknown and say, I don't know what's going on here exactly, but it does seem pretty clear. Joshua knows who's shown up. Now, again, I want to be very careful we don't say things the Bible doesn't state. But God has led his people across the Jordan River, the Ark of the Covenant, and then you have this occasion where the command of the Lord's army shows up. And so the question, people say, well, is this God or not? Is this God in a human form? If it's not, there's every earmark of it. There's every tell of it. Whether it is or not, whether this is God taking on a human form to show his presence, or is an angel who's shown up, what's the message?
That Joshua's taking Moses' place.
That's part of it. What else?
Stay on the Lord's side, they'll have a powerful ally.
He is there with his sword drawn. He's the commander of the Lord's army. There is a host of unseen helpers here. Joshua's not going at this alone. In 2 Kings, there's the occasion where Elisha and his servant are up on the rooftop and the Syrian army has surrounded the city, and Elisha says, don't worry about it. Those who are with us are more than those who are with them. And the servant's like, I don't get it. And then Elisha prays that his eyes would be opened. There's a fiery horses and chariots on all the hills surrounding them. We have eyes to see what the Lord is doing. I'm not going to try to do his part for him. Like, I don't need to understand what all he's up to. But to know that the Lord is fighting his battles and winning, that's a very important realization. So Joshua's not going. This is not about Joshua versus the Canaanites. This is about the Lord and his hosts against evil. And we'll get to that in our next study because we need to talk about why the Canaanites are going to be destroyed. But that is part of what's happening. All right, other thoughts or questions through chapter 5? Peter.
I think that by faith it's so hard because we don't serve a God who is living but yet invisible.
Yeah,
he's there fighting with us. We have to fight his battles. Yet we can't see it because of what's wrong. So it just stops.
Yes, absolutely. Which is why these memorials are so important, because they don't. Christianity is not a religion of emotion only. It's a religion of historical fact. And so we look back at the crossing of the Jordan River. We look back at the crossing of the Red Sea. We look back at the cross, and that happened. And so because God did that then, I have no doubt that he's continuing to work in our lives today. All right. Other thoughts or questions? Thank you for the discussion. Lord willing, this coming Sunday, you'll be in Joshua 6 through 8. So if you read ahead, you got the study guide. If you don't have a study guide and you want one, which I encourage you to get, this keeps you on the same page with everybody, please let me know and I can email that to you or send you get you a physical copy somehow. Otherwise, let's go ahead and close with a prayer. And Peterson, would you mind leading us in prayer?
Sure. Let's bow. Father God, we come before you now, Lord, and we're so grateful for this message that we just read in Joshua. Father God, we're thankful because we know we serve a God who is powerful and has his sword drawn. Lord, we servants of yours, Lord, and sometimes the battle gets tough, Lord, and sometimes the battle seems too hard and too challenging, but we know we need faith that we can overcome any challenge. As we just read, Lord, that you know you have to fight on your side. Can't move unless you move, God, as the Israelites were instructed by the cloud and let them move. We need to wait for your voice from you. We pray that we can read your word and see and understand. We thank you for the study. We thank you for Justin and the time. We just put them in here at the time we're here. You're all servants of yours. You're all the saints.